once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming, exhausted, and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires, we call the interwebs, coming from the heart of America, Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Enough of that. How is it?
How is what?
How was the Falcon Comic Book Party? Last Saturday, October 6th at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. The one that I couldn't go to because I am in the heart of fairgrounds. I've seen pictures on the Facebook site. Dana took a bunch of pictures. She said everything was cool. She didn't really spend a lot of money. Mostly she's on a Harley Quinn kick for some reason. So, but I'm all excited. I want to hear how did it go?
Well, I have a confession to make.
You're not really into redheads and pie?
Oh, hell no. It's all about redheads and pie.
Oh, some things I
Matter
just can't
fact,
remember.
I had a redhead send me a picture of herself holding a pie earlier today.
And of course, you're a rat bastard and won't share it.
Well, of course not. Why should I?
Enough of that. How was Falcon?
I did not make it.
What do you mean you didn't make it?
Well, as I've been saying, group home job that I have, we're down two people on the overnights. And they have not hired anyone since we had the great college student exodus at the end of summer. So, the Friday night before the con. Actually, they called me Friday in the afternoon, and I was waking up from having to do the Thursday overnight, which I normally don't do. And they said, you know, we're absolutely desperate. Is there any way in the world you could come in and do the overnight? And I looked, and it would be 10 hours of overtime, which, hey, you know what? If I start doing overtime, I could go to the grocery store, and I can buy extras like – fresh fruit.
Whoa, you got to be careful. Your colon might not be ready for it.
And they said, okay, you come in at 8 o'clock and you could leave at 6 a.m. So I went in at 8 o'clock, 6 a.m. I come home and I go, all right, I'm going to lay down. I'll sleep for about 3 hours, get up, get ready, go to the con. I wake up at 3:30 in the afternoon. The alarm is still going off.
Corey, bend over here a second.
No.
Ugh, that was an attention getter. You guys got no respect for those of us stuck in Kansas that couldn't go to Falcon Comic Book Party.
Look at it this way, Joe. I slept through my alarm, which had been going off since 9 in the morning.
Where was your roommate in all this?
At work.
Probably still hasn't cleaned her room, but that.
No, of course not, but.
All right.
Enough. She did clean the rest of the house, though, because she had a gentleman caller on Monday.
Hey, now.
To which I said, well, if this is going to make you clean up all your crap around the house, you should have gentleman callers more often.
All right, I suppose I'll forgive you. But I want to see the picture of the redhead with pie. And
later. Off the air.
Let's make a date. May 18th and 19th.
I'm not dating you.
Nope. May 18th and 19th, 2013, 25th annual MCBA Spring Con comic book celebration in the grandstand.
If the universe isn't destroyed by the Mayans.
Mayans, what the hell did they know?
Hey, I'm reading the Hulk. And we found out why the Mayans had the calendar end during 2012. So if you pick up the Hulk,
I'm just shocked you're reading
the Red Hulk is going away.
Everything's going away.
Yeah, but the Red Hulk is going away. And if you read the story, you can see why.
Speaking of sad or going away, I got some sad news here. You want to hit the sad news?
I have sad news too, so Sad news, everyone. Sad news.
And this one, unfortunately, is fairly serious sad news, which I'm sad to hear. One of the guys who's always gone to the MCBA Fall Con, and I bet you I'm going to slaughter his last name. Doug, he does Arsenic Lullabies.
Oh, okay, yes.
He wrote just recently in his blog that it's entitled, I'm going to miss this job, sort of. And the bottom line is, he is not making any money off Arsenic Lullaby. He's not doing, you know, for all he's doing, he says Arsenic Lullaby is in financial ruin. Has been for about 2 years. He says either he's completely delusional, which is possible, even though his book's insanely funny with dark humor, and he has a laundry list of award nominations. Says he's a moron in the field of marketing, or he's such a genius that Arsenic Lullaby is so far ahead of his time that future generations will realize its worth. But the bottom line is he's selling too many books at comic shows and on the web. He's not selling enough comics through comic book shops. And you can go to his blog. It's, again, arsenicllullaby.com. And he'll talk about how it got that way. But the problem is if he sells to comic book shops, if you go pick up your copy of Arsenic Lullaby at a comic book shop, that grows his base. And it's easier for him to have one big sale rather than to meet people at comic conventions and do a lot of little sales. Because the problem with comic conventions is, with the exception of the MCBA, which has always given creators free tables, gas, airfare, hotel room, help. If you know, a lot of times he counts on help from fans because he's basically just a one-man operation. And the problem is all that money he makes at a con gets eaten up. So he's not making anything going to cons. A lot of people don't buy the book at comic shops because they say, I'll wait and see Doug at the con, trade a few insults, you know, have a few laughs. And while he's saying he appreciates that, again, it's not helping him grow. And same thing with the website. The website is just sales one at a time. And, you know, it's unfortunately, he's not looking for someone to jump in and say, hey, try this. Because obviously for 2 years, he's tried it. But the bottom line is not enough people buying the book in the shop. Where is he going from here? I don't know. He's just not, he didn't give himself, you know, he's not asking for questions, concerns, ideas. He figures he's just going to catch up on sleep. But it's kind of a ongoing problem with just the comic industry. Is the model shifting to websites, personal appearances, which are not a decent way to make a money? I mean, once upon a time you did a web strip with somebody and she did the books through, was it Cafe Press?
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah, I think it was Cafe Press, and then she was going to move them to somewhere else, and then she had a complete mental breakdown, which continues to this day, which is why I did a strip with a different artist.
So the question I had, was that just her profiting from that, or did you get a piece of that action? And did you get
Time, I was using it for, basically, I was taking the strip and showing it to people saying, hey, you know, here's the kind of stuff that I can do, looking for jobs in the comics industry again. And they pretty much all said, yeah, this is really, really good. But then when the artist flaked out, let's put it this way, when an artist flakes out and ends a strip in the middle of a story and then takes down the strip with no notice, so that I was unable to get copies of the strip for myself, you really can't use it as kind of a
showing.
Yeah, to so say, here's what I can do.
I guess the curious I was, and we probably can't know, is, you know, are people making a living off just selling it on the website?
There are some who are and some who aren't.
Can't. Unfortunately, with Arsenic Lullaby, which I find insanely darkly humorous. And again, it's not everybody's cup of tea. I'm not saying run out. Actually, I am saying run out to your comic shop and get Arsenic Lullaby. Again, I don't know if you were to suddenly go to his website and buy something, if it would help. I think he's just got to step back and figure out what he's doing. But I can't help but think there's other books that I've enjoyed. True Story, Swear to God. And he went to Image of all places and just wasn't making enough money doing it at Image. You know, now he sells commissions online and I think he does local things, you know. So
that actually ties into my sad news.
Okay.
And that is one of the Marvel books that I've really enjoyed over the past 3 years, Avengers Academy, is ending. And the writer has basically said, look, you know, we could talk about relaunches. We could talk about this. We could talk about that. The book just isn't selling enough copies for Marvel to make a profit on it. And Christos Gage has worked on a lot of books at Marvel. He's moving back to working for video games because it's easier to make a living at video games. Because there you write the script, they sell this many copies, you get a salary at Marvel, you get a page rate, and then you may or may not get royalties depending on if you sell enough copies to make more than the page rate. But I was looking at over at The Beat, where they're starting to do some study of the numbers for last month. And at Marvel, the only book they had, the only book they had that sold over 60,000 copies was Avengers versus X-Men.
Over what?
60,000 copies.
Wow. I mean, when we started
the X-Men did not sell over 60,000.
When they started, when we started the podcast, we were talking how 100,000 was what X-Men was selling, or Avengers, or somebody. I mean,
yeah,
how rare that was. Now we're down 40,000.
Well, the other thing is, Ed Brubaker gave a kind of an exit interview on Word Balloon. Ed Brubaker, who wrote Captain America, Winter Soldier. He did some X-Men work. His book over at Image, Fatale, is one of my favorite comics being published. His series, his creator-owned series at Marvel, Criminal, probably the best crime comic ever published. He talked about how when things were at their lowest point in the 90s, Marvel's top-selling books were selling 90,000 copies, and everybody was freaking out. And, you know, they had to make big changes. They had to completely revamp editorial. They had to get rid of Bob Harris and all of his people, and they brought in Joe Quesada. And now, you know, we had that bump in the mid-90s, and now it's back down even further. Now, one thing we don't know, how many copies anybody is selling digitally, and they're not going to release that information because they don't have to. But I doubt that there are 30 to 40,000 people right now who are buying their comics digitally. Now, there may be a couple hundred thousand who are torrenting them, but buying them digitally, I don't think so. And it really hurts the smaller guys like Arsenic Lullaby. Because if you own a shop and you're only selling, let's say, 30 to 40 copies of the X-Men, you're not going to take a chance on a book that may sell maybe at some point, like Arsenic Lullaby.
And one that gets critical acclaim, and one that, you know, it's not a monthly book, you know, so it
right.
does come out, you know, when he gets a collection done.
And one thing I've learned over the years, and you probably learned it too when you owned your shop, critical acclaim, that and a quarter will get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Todd McFarlane.
How many Spring Grant books did you order for the shop that you had to eat?
Oh, yeah.
Or
I mean, every week we pulled, what, about a long box, two long boxes worth off the shelf, and that was the big wall of wonder, you know, that spread the entire side of the building, you know. I mean, it's interesting because Todd McFarlane talked about that at the beginning of his run on Image, you know, back when he was arrogant and could do no wrong. And now he's arrogant and he does wrong, but he talks about, you know, why should my book Spawn, which at the time was probably selling 200-300 copies in my store, subsidize other people's work? In other words, you get the same shelf space on the shelf, you know, basically a comic book size. And we had the shelves where you could actually see the cover, which, you know, was the big selling point. You know, there's no reason to rack it so you could see just the title. The cover sometimes draws people in. And he says books like his, and of course, by, you know, taking his argument on X-Men, but obviously he wasn't going to give Marvel any credit at that time. He says, he sells so many and you're making so much money with my book. Why don't I get better placing than some other book, which only comes out every so often and you put one or two on the shelf? He's getting the exact same placing. And I understood what he was saying. And I was like, well, you know, your book's what allows me to do pay the rent. You know, his book's what allows me to have fun in comics, you know, to find some of the smaller, more obscure things that people may like. And by that definition, it's also guys like you, because you're the one who came to me and said, you got to put this Walking Dead on the shelf. Trust me. And that was back, what, issue 20, 30, when it was
Come out? I think it was only one or two trades were out.
Yeah, and we were only – that was when Crazy Comics, not the Big Shop, was out.
So. Yeah.
But, you know, it's a chicken-egg argument. What comes first? And, you know, the other thing to Todd was like, Todd, it's my freaking store. It's none of your business what I do.
And my feeling, I remember reading that at the time, thinking, you know, what I was – when I worked in comic shops – in the 80s, the rule was you could take the X-Men and you could hide it in the back of the store and people would dig through to find it, to buy it. It's the stuff that nobody has heard of or nobody thought of that you wanted to give the good placement to. And when I worked at Schindler's, we did that till they got mad and made me switch it. I could put, you know, we'd put the X-Men toward the back of the comic racks. That way people had to go past everything else to get to the X-Men. Now, you had your people who they would just make the beeline. They'd buy the X-Men books. They'd buy Spider-Man, and then they'd leave.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put the X-Men and, oh, look, here's some of this, here's some of that, they would at least look at the other stuff, pick it up, flip through it. Maybe they'd buy it. It's like the grocery store. I always use this analogy with the grocery store. Joe, where do they put the milk in the grocery store?
Oh, yeah, all the way in the back.
And you have to go through the produce department, past these shelves, through all of that to get to the milk. And then the bread is in another part of the store, and you have to go through all the rows to get to that.
Check out the.
They don't do that just because they want to be a pain in the ass. They do that because you walk by everything, you're going to buy stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's why electronics usually and toys are always in the back of the shop because, you know, guys head back there. And the end cap is one of the most sought after place in the store to the point where, you know, big manufacturers will pay Sears or Target or Walmart or Best Buy to have the end cap. And that kind of – there was a little bit of talk of that in the 90s when I had Hot Comics where – people like McFarlane were saying, well, my book sells better. Why don't I get better placement? And I'm like, well, why don't you pay me for it? A big store does instead of whining about it. I mean, seriously, if somebody had come up to me and said, hey, I will give you $100 a month if you put my book here every month. You know, that's how Disney Adventures and Reader's Digest and TV Guide were always at the checkout line right before you walked out. They pay for that placement.
Or now, the Archie Digest.
The problem was, is at the time, Marvel was willing to do that, but at the same time, they said, well, we want to know how our books sell. And this was still a transition from old guys in a shoebox to modern comic book stores now, where they actually use the direct sale barcode on the cover to track their books. And people were very suspicious about Marvel, because they're like, well, if we tell you how things will sell, you're just going to turn around and sell it on your own. And things like Marvel Mart and now digital sales aren't necessarily helping comic shops sleep well at night, because it's almost as much as, you know, you'd buy even the comic books themselves. You buy it, and then inside they're saying, oh, I can sell you a subscription for half price. Why should I stock it in my store? But there was all sorts of issues. The main thing was that people were too suspicious. And another thing was there was no way to computerize and get the form in some way that Marvel could use it. Plus, if they didn't have everybody, I think, what were there, 3,000 to 5,000 comic book shops in the beginning of the 90s? Actually, there's probably more, because baseball card shops were jumping in. Everybody was jumping in, you know.
At the peak, there were 10,000 shops, according to the stuff that I have from the old internal correspondence with Cap City.
And
they said that they had 10,000 accounts.
That's amazing that Marvel and DC had no idea how their books were selling in a store. They only knew how the books sold leaving Diamond Capital Heroes World. They had no idea if I bought, you know, 300 copies of X-Men, was I selling 300 copies of X-Men? And
were you selling 200 and keeping 100 for back issues?
Was I giving them out at Halloween, which, again, is a great thing to do for Halloween coming up? Give away comics. You should have seen the kids' faces when I stuffed comics in their bags instead of candy. Like Peter David's, rot their mind, not their teeth.
Well, I actually have a story about that. Because remember back in the 80s, they started to give out comics instead of candy for Halloween. And I actually went, I was buying online, and they had special little comics that you'd buy to give out on Halloween. And I planned to do that. My first year, I was renting a house, my final year of college, and kids would come up and ring the doorbell, and I'd, you know, give them comics, and they'd look at me as if I was an evil bastard. And the moms would kind of go, do you have any candy?
Wow. That's amazing.
And I kind of learned that, okay, maybe we should just give out the candy.
That's funny. Because, I mean, when I did it a few times at my house, and we did it at the shop too, we'd give the kids comics, and they liked it. You know, but I'd also look at the comics and make piles, like, okay, these are Archies for all ages and kids, for girls. These are some Action Comics. Unfortunately, Ultimate Spider-Man was just coming out. The big thing, I didn't want to give them a comic that, you know, like an Image hyper-violent, hyper-booby comic.
Right.
I didn't want it coming back at me. So I always double-check. But I always found that was a good idea. The few times I would order those special comic things, I either never got them or I got them after Halloween. I was like, well, maybe I'll save them for next year. So it was something fun. Speaking of fun, Corey, do you read Fables?
No, I actually dropped out a couple of years. I dropped out when they did the big crossover.
Oh, I don't think I've read that yet. I got to the end of the war, and then every time I brought home a graphic novel, Dana would grab it, and I never got them back.
Yeah, the great Fables crossover, I decided, oh, I'm going to tap out on buying the individual issues, and then I will pick up the trades. And then, of course, the job thing happened, so I will have to pick up the trades once I get a job.
Okay, well, let's go about it differently. You know where Rochester, Minnesota is, right?
Why, yes, I do. That's where the Mayo Clinic is.
And?
That's where you go to get your Mayo treated.
There's actually going to be a con there.
I have heard that.
It's called Fable Town and Beyond. It's March 22nd, 24th through the 24th, 2013 in Rochester, Minnesota. And if you go to fablescon.com, you'll get all the information there. Basically, Fables creator Bill Willingham, he's going to be your host for an event, and they're just bringing fans and fans of other mythic fiction out to attend the convention. The website's asking for call for volunteers. They'll have the Kill Shakespeare bar.
That's a great book, by the way. It's from IDW. And that's a really great comic book.
You know, I'm just looking kind of at the website here. And Rochester is about an hour south of Minneapolis. You could probably get cheap tickets into Minneapolis and just get a rental car and go straight south. If anybody needs a map and you don't know how to use Google, just give me a yell and I'll help you out. But you got Mark Buckingham. Bill, of course, will be there. Allison Baker, Kurt Busiek, Peter Gross. Ooh, she's pretty. Lauren, how do you say your last name? Pukes? P-E-U-K-E-S?
I don't know.
Adam Hughes is going to be there. Gene Ha. So it looks to be a good event. They're announcing people. I'm dying to go, but I never know where the heck I'm going to be. So anyways, check it out. I'll toss a link up on our Crazy Comics and Stuff, the official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page.
That's all. Official? Did you know, Joe, that this show officially has a sponsor?
We do.
We do. And that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. They host over a million different web pages.
And you're nothing without a web page.
That's right. You got to have a web page. And they've just added something new. They have cloud storage if you have a web page. So let's say I've got a web page and there's stuff on my hard drive that I'm scared the hard drive will crash, because we've all been through hard drive crashes, haven't we, Joe?
Never.
You can put it out on the cloud storage, and that's just part, another of the wonderful things that they give you if you buy a web page. And if you use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year.
And Corey gets another $20 in his pocket.
Speaking of $20 in my pocket, one of our old sponsors will be returning on our next show.
Ooh, can you give us a hint?
I can give you a hint that the ad costs $20.
Ooh. You mean I could give you $20 and have my own ad on this here podcast?
You probably could.
Yeah.
However, if you're not one of the hosts of the podcast, it might cost you a little more because, you know, we do have 2,500 downloads. Actually, I haven't looked in a while. I know the earlier episodes are still being downloaded. But we get an average of about 2,500 downloads every 2 weeks. So if you want your ad to be part of the show, just go ahead and shoot me an email at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising.
And, you know, we'll do anybody, Barnes & Noble, Pepsi, KFC, give us a call. We're easy.
Maybe we're not cheap, but we're easy.
Well, compared to some of the, you know, Super Bowl expense, we're fairly economical.
Now, have you been following wrestling the last week and a half, Joe?
Yeah.
Not just the TV show, but I go to PWInsider.com. There's a plug.
Which is the best damn site for any wrestling news, because they don't report gossip and innuendo. They only work with facts, just the facts.
And they won't report anything till they get at least two sources. Sometimes they wait for more because they don't want their sources to get outed. But there was a huge creative shakeup at two of the three big wrestling companies. Brian Gerwitz, who's been the head writer for the WWE for over 10 years, was sent home. And his right-hand man was sent home. Vince McMahon said, well, you know, we need changes. And he shook up the creative team. He has told people that everybody's job is at risk. Yeah, sure, I'm sure Stephanie's job is at risk. His daughter, Stephanie, I'm sure that she has to worry about her job. But then over at Ring of Honor, Jim Cornette, who's the head booker, he was also kind of removed from that duty, and Delirious, who was the pro wrestler who was the head booker before him, is now in charge. And for both of them, the heads of the companies have said, you know, we've been making mistakes for a while. we need to correct these mistakes. And we'll see. Ring of Honor, I've actually really enjoyed. It's on your local Sinclair station, so you have to look it up. But it's an hour long, and you get as much wrestling on that hour long show as you do on the 3 hour Raw.
And the sad part for me is I had just discovered Ring of Honor, and I got sent away. I think I had a text. I was watching it. Just basically was, oh, my God, this is awesome.
And some people are going to say, well, why are you bringing it up on this here comic book podcast, the longest running episodic comic book podcast in the history of the known universe?
And I've checked on Snopes. It hasn't been disproven.
That's right. We're also seeing Marvel doing a huge creator shakeup. With Bendis leaving the X-Men, they pretty much moved everybody around. You've also seen some creators leave. Ed Brubaker's leaving. He's saying he's not never coming back. He just wants to do creator-owned stuff. He sold a couple TV series.
Which is interesting, because I always stop and I look at the beat, you know, what we talked about in the beginning, and all these guys are going to go do creator-owned stuff. I'm like, seriously, is the market even going to support it?
Well, one thing is over at Image, these are the big names. Grant Morrison's Happy with Derek Robertson came out a couple weeks ago, and it sold a little over 35,000 copies. It'll probably be closer to 40 once all the reorders and everything are in. And with creator-owned, he said that that's the same as selling 100,000 copies of something at DC, plus he owns it. And there have been a lot of creators when they leave Marvel and DC are talking about the fact that they want to own it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm beating this horse long after it's dead, but before Watchmen really shook a lot of creators up, saying, you know what, Alan Moore was supposed to have the most creator-friendly contract in the history of comics. However, regime change, all the agreements they had with him are thrown out. And, oh, yeah, we're going to do more Watchmen stuff, even though he doesn't want anybody to do it. There are some things in his contract that, from what I hear, there were things in the contract that could have prohibited it if things were different, really complicated stuff. But a lot of creators are saying, you mean they can take the stuff that I did even if they said that I own it, and do whatever they want with it? Neil Gaiman's one of these guys who they've always had a gentleman's agreement that they won't do any Watchmen stuff without his approval.
Sandman.
Well, that's right, Sandman. I think that gentleman's agreement is only going to be in place as long as Neil Gaiman continues to work with them.
Well, you did notice that the previous regime, there was a story where, what was it, the 20th anniversary or 25th anniversary? And Neil came up and he said, hey, I have this story we can do. And they said, no, thanks.
Yeah.
And now with the regime change, Neil announced that they are doing something. So, hey, did I tell you my daughter's, did I share my daughter's Neil Gaiman story the last podcast?
No, you did not.
Oh, this is how cool Neil is. Okay. My daughter is a huge Neil Gaiman fan, because as she got older, I started her on Sandman and she's read Watchmen, and right now she would die to meet Grant Morrison. My daughter was going down to First Avenue to see the Amanda Palmer concert. And so they're all excited, her and her two friends and Dana's looking and she's like, I know that guy. Who is that? I think it's Neil Gaiman. She recognizes Neil Gaiman, and they run over and I don't know what she said, but I get this call from Dana and it's like, oh my God, this is so cool. We met Neil Gaiman. Now we stopped to get a photograph. It was so, so cool. Right before First Avenue. Dana, slow down. Think before you talk. I just met Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer. And they were gushing and having fun, and they're like, oh, can we get a picture? And I don't know if it was one of the handlers said, no, we got to get inside. Neil said, no, one picture is not going to hurt. So she got a picture, her and her friends, with Neil Gaiman and Amanda Palmer right outside First Avenue before they went in to do the show. And I think Dana is just insanely happy, you know, because the picture she put on her Facebook page is like, I'm touching Neil Gaiman. And I just thought, I sent a note to Neil, and I have no idea if he'll ever, ever get it. But I just said, you've made my daughter's day, you know, because of what you did. Thank you. And Dana said the concert was great. I read a review on City Pages of the concert. They said other than the noise bleeding through from one of the other concert venues, they all had a pretty good time. And Dana is somewhat of a god amongst her friends because, I mean, she actually recognized Neil Gaiman. I recognized Neil Gaiman from a far way away. So, and that happened a couple of weeks ago, I think the week after the Comic-Con. So that was pretty sweet.
Well, we were talking about creative changes out of, you know, major shakeups and errors and sales dropping, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to get into Tales from the Shop. So, Joe, what do you think was the biggest mistake you ever made at your first comic shop?
I don't want to do Tales from the Shop because we don't have a sponsor.
No, we don't have a sponsor for Tales from the Shop. So, you know, the little spiel I did a little earlier about if you want to be a sponsor for the show? Yeah, email me at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject, advertising.
Let's see, biggest mistake at the shop.
Well, I could talk about the biggest mistake I made working at a comic shop.
It's so hard to just pick one. I mean, I think opening the shop might have been. No, it certainly wasn't to make money. Actually, Gruber and I figured out we did a plan before we went in, and we did figure, if you ever seen Young Frankenstein, it could work! The big mistakes that come to mind, really, I think mostly just ordering mistakes, you know? I mean, I'm sure there's people that I pissed off and chased away because of my personality, but, you know, it was just, there'd be things you'd order and you'd suddenly at the end of the month be stuck with like 50 of them and you're like, where am I going to do with these things? But most of the time when I made a mistake, and I think this is a testament to my having worked 10 years at Sears, most of the time if I made a mistake, I just try to make the best of it. I mean, there was a time I think I ordered a hardcover book. And again, in the 90s, a hardcover graphic novel was fairly rare. So when one came out, it was a pretty decent event. And I think I meant to order 5 and I ordered 25 by mistake. And I looked at it and I did the math and I'm like, you know, if I sell 5 of these, I'm going to make X. If I lower the price to these to maybe a couple bucks above cost and I sell all of them, I'll still make X. So let's have a sale and sell them at X. And it worked. I blew out all 25 of the books. I gave, and it was a deal where it was like, it was a $25 graphic novel. I sold it for 12 bucks, which may be like a buck or two above cost. So. And I learned that from Sears because every so often Sears would break, back when they actually were a retail store, they would break they broke the $1,000 camcorder barrier. You know, before then, camcorders were $15 to $2,000. They came out with one for $1,000. And I mean, literally, we sold hundreds at my shop. We couldn't keep the things in stock. They were selling so fast. And the management, you know, when I talked to them, I said, how are you guys making money? He said, well, we're counting on the fact we're going to sell a ton of them. We're not going to make as much on it as we did if we sold a more expensive one, but we're going to sell a lot of them. They sold too many of them. They couldn't keep up with demand. And then eventually, you know, everybody else noticed. Highland Electronics, if you remember them. Best Buy, Ward's, if you remember them. You know, so it was just one of those things that I learned. And every so often when I would make an ordering mistake, I would do that. Sometimes I would just eat it. Now, if I ordered 100 copies of a comic instead of 10, okay, well, guess what? I'm giving everybody a free comic this week, so you can check this out. I think I told the story of baseball cards when I ordered a case instead of a pack or instead of a box, so I just sold them all for 50 cents a pack, which got all the baseball card guys in town upset. Oh, you're putting us out of business. How can you be selling this cheap? Made a mistake. I ordered too many. Oh, okay. You want to buy some? No. So generally, those are the big ones I can think about.
The one I have, and this is a bit confessional, because, you know, hey, you know what? Shinders doesn't exist anymore. I doubt anybody who worked there at the time.
Remember, we always got to give that out. The new guys with Beyond Shinders, the previous workers that took the store name. So when you go to Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and you find Shinders, they're not the Shinders Corey's talking about.
Right. It's basically Shinders went down in 2006.
And they went down.
And we could go into that in great detail at some point because I now know just about everything that happened. But the Beyond Shinders is basically some of the employees pooled their money together and said, you know, we want to keep this type of store going. And but I started working at Shinders in 1988.
88.
That's Joe, that's when you say, damn, you're old.
I can't because we're the same age.
But I started in 88. Here I am, fresh out of college, in a new city. First time I'd ever been in a big city because I went to college in Macomb, Illinois, which 10,000 people, 9,000 of which were the college students. And I had just started at Shinders, and they moved me from store to store. You know, you're the comic guy. You'll work at this store. You'll work at that store. Then if we need people at other stores. It's a lot like the group home, except with more travel. Mm-hmm. And when I started at one of the stores, I won't say which one because I just won't. There were some people there who were big comic book guys.
Big, big. And we're not talking fat.
Well, in one case, we are. Well, right. But they were big comic book guys, and they knew everything that was coming out. And they followed all the books that came out. And me, I just still bought the same stuff that I bought when I was buying comics when I was in college. I didn't expand to buy tons. And comic book day was Friday back then. And most of the time, I would have Friday off. I would work Saturday and Sunday instead. But I came in, they needed me on a Friday, and one of the guys who was putting the comics up on the shelf, what he did was he would put them up on the shelf, and for every comic, he'd pull three. He'd put them aside. And for every comic, he'd pull three. And it was, there were two big comic fans there other than me. And he, you know, took the four-wheel cart, and he'd put all the comics up. You know, he'd pulled three aside, and then he came back. And he divided them up. There was one for the other guy and two for him. One for the other guy, two for him. One for the other guy and two for him. That was back in the days when there were a lot of comic fans who would buy two books. You know, one to read, one to bag. I never did that, but there were people who did. And then the end of his shift, I noticed he had not bought any comics, but the comics were gone. And he had a briefcase. And I worked a few other Fridays, and that continued to happen until there was one Friday when a whole bunch of stuff came out, and it was at the end of his shift, and I saw him sitting on his briefcase to try to latch the hooks, and one of the other employees said, "I don't think it's gonna shut no matter how long you sit on it." And it was at that point I realized that hey, he's just taken two of each comic for himself. Now, Joe, what are you supposed to do in this situation?
Bribe him. I'm sorry. Tell management, you know, say, hey, this guy's ripping shit off.
You know who the other guy you pulled one book each for? Store manager.
Nice.
And all I could think is, you know, if I turn him in, if I go and say, hey, they're doing this, it's their word against mine. All the other employees seem to know that they do it because they're watching. They're not saying anything. One of them's joking about it. you know what? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and keep ringing the register.
Yeah.
And I should have gone to upper management, but I never did because of the peer pressure. And there you go. There's my confession and the biggest mistake I ever made working at a comic shop.
And no wonder they went under. Actually,
yeah, they went under almost 20 years later.
Yep. That was another reason. Sorry to blame. No pie for you today. Mournfully sucked the cream out of a Twinkie.
So, Joe, geeking and freaking.
Ah.
I saw something you were geeking about. You posted on your Facebook page, and I about laughed myself sick. Well, so why don't you start with your geeking?
What was it? I don't even remember.
Avengers versus X-Men number 12.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you said that, because I downloaded my second comic, first one I ever paid for. And why is it when you and I do something, Corey, it's a freaking ordeal? It should be
because
straightforward.
Mark upset.
I think somebody somewhere knows that we're doing a podcast, and they're like, let's mess with these boys so they have something to talk about.
Barkop has a rule, nothing is easy.
Oh, because, you know, I had either you or Pat or somebody promised they would mail me a copy, but I got to that point.
It was not me, I know that.
I might have asked you to do it, would have asked you, but I got to the point where it was like, you know what? Just like Walking Dead when I was in New Jersey, just like the first Doctor Who of this season, you know, I've been waiting for it. I'm not waiting for it because somebody somewhere is going to spoil it. That's just a fact of life, is that somebody somewhere will spoil something because they just don't think, oh, my God, I can't believe that we got shot in the bum. You know, and you're like, oh, geez, there I go. 11 issues of the comic. I'm so verklempt. I need a drink. Hang on a minute. So I figured, you know what? I'm just going to download it. I'm signed up with Marvel. They give me a feed every couple days talking about, this is cool, you should check this out. So I followed the link, called up my account, paid my $5, $4.99. No cut in price. And I figured I'll just download the issue and watch it. So I opened up Windows Explorer and started to download it and got nothing but a black screen. And I said, aw, crap. On the plus side, once I rebooted the computer, it did recognize that I had bought the comic, so I didn't have to rebuy it. But after two or three tries, I said, you know what, this thing is not downloading. I did not pay $5 online to wait for it. Screw them, I'm using Chrome. Fortunately, Chrome downloaded it, but it took a while, and I had to reboot the computer again because it, like, downloaded half the books. I'm reading it, and you saw the picture. What I did is my laptop's got this huge gash in it, and if you look at the picture, you'll see the monitor's cracked. And the problem is the monitor costs about half the amount the dumb laptop did, so I just can't buy the laptop monitor because, I mean, they're easy to do. You just pop the crack. There's a screw on the bottom. Plug it in, plug it out, whatever. But because I bought a high definition monitor, the laptop itself was $800. The monitor alone's $500. Go figure. I was going to order a new computer, and then I thought, you know what? I brought my cable. I just plugged it into the HDTV. So I could sit back and in glorious 47-inch screen television, I could read Avengers versus X-Men. And it was pretty cool. You know, I could, you know, I'm using the mouse, moving it back and forth, reading. The one thing I found out, I'm not that thrilled with reading online comics. I mean, I think I would be if I was like reading something old or something that, you know, would cost me a couple $1,000 to buy. But in this way, it was fun. It was unique, but I couldn't see doing it. Especially not for $5. I mean, if they'd cut me a cost of a couple bucks, which is probably a fear every comic shop has, I could very easily see myself, why am I paying $3 online when I can go for $2 and buy it, you know, direct?
Yeah.
And of course, then there's the other argument, you know, why buy $5 at all when I can go to Discount Comic Book Service and probably get it for half price anyways? That's a
different.
There
you go.
So I read it that way. The other thing that's interesting is I don't know if it's just me and my fumble fingers. Every time I read a comic book, when I get near the end of it, it's like a couple pages get stuck together. And so I'll be reading it and I'll turn it. And all of a sudden the story makes no sense. And then I go back and realize, oh, I skipped over three pages of artwork. Doesn't happen when you're doing it digitally. So I was able to actually read it and get caught up on it, which was nice.
And we'll actually be talking about it later in the show.
So that was fun. The other thing I was geeking on, I went, after listening to everybody pan Phantom Stranger Zero, I did buy it. It's one of the comics in my ever-decreasing pile of comics. I've actually read about half of the comics I brought, but I'm not going to talk about all of them because then we have nothing to talk about the next 9 weeks. But I did read The Phantom Stranger, and I found I actually kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was okay. Again, I think it's a story that didn't need to be told.
Joe is speaking goodly English, everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, again, it's kind of a goodly comic. And I thought it was interesting the way some of it, this is a spoiler warning if anybody cares. I mean, the book's, 3 weeks old, and we've already talked about it. But he accidentally releases the Spectre. And when he did that, a coin dropped off because he's got the... 30 pieces of silver around his neck because he allegedly betrayed Jesus. One of the coins popped off. So I thought of all the things that actually added something to the story. And if they ever do put DC Universe back the way it was, I would probably keep that. Because first of all, the problem is he doesn't know what or when he'll be called into service to right these wrongs he did. So basically he spent 2,000 years wandering the earth until he finally came and discovered this is something he needs to correct. And
so for 2,000 years, he didn't fix anything.
Well, he didn't know what to fix. He just kind of wandered. It's kind of like you're keeping the Phantom Stranger on cosmic retainer and we'll call you when we need you. So again, I don't know if they really haven't defined his powers. You know, he's kind of mopey about it, but I think from the Zero issue, he should be actually a little more pleased because now he realizes there is an ending. He does now know what will happen when he does right. And in the meantime, he can just do what he does, which is kind of how the Phantom Stranger was in the old DC universe. He just showed up when was needed. So I actually enjoyed it. I know Phantom Stranger 1 came out. I'm going to give my comic store a call and try to pick it up. The final thing I'm geeking on, one of the books that I brought is called Why Does Batman Carry Shark Repellent? And Other Amazing Comic Book Trivia by...
I so love that book.
Brian Cronin. He does a column on comic resources, and he does just fun things like comic Easter eggs and different lists and things. And this book just has outrageous, fascinating, and bizarre facts, all sorts of things. And I'll just read the back cover. It's like 9 celebrities who guest starred in comic books without their permission, 7 bands that got their names from comic, 10 crazy items actually found in Batman's utility belt, and shark repellent wasn't one of them.
Because that was on the TV show, not the comic.
And Robin handed it down to him, although I think they later incorporated it as a wink to that. 5 comic book inventions that eventually became real. 5 stupidest superhero origins. And they cover everybody. Batman, Spider-Man, Aquaman, X-Men. So I pick 1 or 2 comics if I feel like it and I read it. And then I crack this book open, read a couple of the different things like... yesterday I read 9 goofiest moments in the first 20 issues of Batman. And a lot of it, you know, some of it was like Robin slapped Batman unconscious. because Robin knows what to do. I mean, Robin dropping Batman with one punch. And, you know,
one punch.
Yep. That was back in Batman 3. You know, anyways, it's a fun book. If you're like us, and you must be, if you're listening to us babble on and on week after week about comics, I would suggest picking it up. Why Does Batman Carry Shark Repellent by Brian Cronin? It's a plum book. And he also has a second one out, which he has advertised. If you go check him out on Comic Resources, comicbookresources.com, it's under the column, All Comic Books Should Be This Good. You know, I'm sure he'll have a link to his book. Find it on Amazon, eBay. Although I recommend go to your local comic store and ask for it.
Well, this episode actually continues into the next one. We're editing
it. Oh, I hate to be continued. It sounds like a cheap ploy just to get you to continue to watch.
But, Joe, just think of it this way. Maybe you're being eaten by a giant Venus flytrap. Or maybe the Joker has you in a giant jack-in-the-box that will spring you into an acid bath. There are all sorts of different cliffhangers.
I could be tied to a buoy in the middle of a... in the middle of the ocean with a bomb shark coming at me.
See?
Hoping some friendly porpoises will intercept the bomb.
And, you know, as one of my favorite lines from the Batman movie is, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Why he didn't get the Academy Award for that? Between that now, and Admiral Akbar, it's a trap!
Did you see the Dark Knight movie from this summer?
No.
Well, I'm going to spoil it a bit for you. At the big ending is there's this bomb that's about to go off in Gotham City, and he has to pick it up with the Batwing and carry it off. And I'm just watching it, and in my mind I'm going, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. And I know they wouldn't have done it because they would have treated it seriously. But come on, guys. Somebody's got to edit in where he picks up the bomb and he's getting ready to drop it, and there's a bunch of ducks. And he goes over there. Oh, there's a bunch of nuns. Oh, there's a Salvation Army band. So he flies out to sea to get rid of it.
You know, and this is actually a good point to ask people. Not about bombs or Batman, but, you know, we're going into the second hour here of the podcast. Do our listeners want two-hour podcasts, or do you want us to continue to cut them in half for our podcasts? Do you want more? Do you want less?
Because we just get on the phone and we start talking.
Oh, yeah.
I think – how long was the notes? Let's see. The notes were not even half a page long, and we've gone for a while, and we got a while to go.
Yeah.
We still haven't done obscure characters.
Yeah, and I even had one. We'll get it done next episode.
Why, yes, we will.
Us know. Give us some feedback. Put it on our official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page.
Or you can email me at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject podcast.
Yep, because
better at that, aren't I?
Yeah, because otherwise, you know,
85 episodes in, and I'm finally doing some marketing.
Free underwear, free pie, free redheads of the week. You know, you got to be able to distinguish yourself, otherwise, Corey will never get your message.
That's right. And wait, I get redheads?
Never
mind. Why am I still doing this podcast if I get redheads?
Well, just never mind.
You know what I say every week, Joe?
What is that?
I say that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.
Yeah.
And what do you say?
Somebody call my mama. It's time to dance. Hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, 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 yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Don't say it. Yeah.